All right, thanks for joining me, everyone. Charles Moskowitz, welcome to the program. Dovid is here, as we usually do this program on Thursdays, live at 3 p.m. on all of our subscribing networks. I particularly want to set a shout out to Getter, which is one of the networks that's really growing for me right now, and which I'm pleased to be on. I'm also still on YouTube on a very small station that I found. I mean, so I'm still up there. And on all of the other subscribing stations, and those numbers are growing, apparently, as I look at this thing. I'm also going to give out the phone number. If you'd like to join us by phone, you're welcome to do that. 617-396-4958. That number again, 617-396-4958. And the chat is on Rumble, the Rumble station, which is Charles Moskowitz at Rumble. So, Dovid, obviously the big and even the earth-shattering issue right now has been and remains the fact that the Supreme Court has rescinded Roe versus Wade, something that I never thought would happen in my lifetime. I mean, I've seen conservative presidents like the Bushes appoint conservative judges who really didn't seem to have the nerve to do it, other than Clarence Thomas, and other than Alito, I should point out, because he was appointed by George W. Bush. But it did take the three Trump appointees to get together and actually take out and read the Constitution and realize that the federal government has no business involving itself in those sorts of questions, such as abortion, death penalty, you know, social questions generally, which are specifically the purview of the states. Article 9 and 10 of the Constitution confirm that. So it's creating quite a ruckus, obviously. We tend to discuss issues from a Jewish perspective. I was listening to Dr. E. Michael Jones say that abortion is a Jewish sacrament, acknowledging that only the Catholic Church has sacraments, but he says that if we had one, it would be. And he noted that there were a lot of Jewish organizations and people coming out of the woodwork around the time that the Alito decision was first leaked, saying that abortion is a Jewish right and it's a religious right, and that to not have it was a violation of religious freedom. So he's not entirely wrong about that. I have heard that sort of stuff even in my own travels from fellow Jews who have said this. The government is interfering in our right. And I did a little research and I found out that indeed most of the very liberal Jewish establishment, what I'd like to call the Sabbatian establishment, does say this. They say that we have a right to abortion, Jewish women and American women in general, right up to the moment of birth. Except I found one organization that does not, and that is the Agudis, Agudath Israel of America. I'm not sure you're familiar with them, Dovid, right?
Yeah, no, I went to school in Jerusalem with Rabbi Zwiebel's son. I was at his wedding. I prayed in Emunas Yisrael in Brooklyn. I knew multiple people on the board of directors, the Novominska Rebbe of blessed memory. I'd got a blessing from him, Rabbi Gluck. In fact, my mother used to send me a check when I was in New York, and she used to send it to the Agudas Yisrael, because a rabbi in Detroit had a family member that worked there. So I used to pick up my check that my mother supplemented me with from the Agudas headquarters in New York. And I mean, it's not surprising that, certainly on this issue, I mean, although the Agudas Yisrael opposed Trump's Muslim travel ban, and, it's generally Democratic because they're in New York and most of our allies are Democrats because that's who we work with. Certainly like abortion and school choice is the main one that has conservative leanings. I mean, it's tough to speak on behalf of Judaism. It's almost kind of pointless because if you're going to take the concept that Judaism is what Jews do, not what Jews say. And if you take it to a conclusion, like being against the state of Israel, you know, like certainly all of these people have the right to return to Israel. And what does it mean? You know, say, well, this is what Judaism teaches, or just that you find one organization that you may or may be loosely affiliated with. And, you know, because I would say the majority of Jewish Republicans are Orthodox Jews. And the issues that matter to Orthodox Jews, align with the Republican Party, but not exclusively. There's many issues that are less aligned with the Republican Party than others.
So, David, first of all, I don't want to get off the subject and comment on this remark that the Agudis were opposed to the, quote, Muslim ban, which was a hoax and a lie. President Trump never engaged in or implemented a Muslim ban. That was pushed by the leftist media, and they might have got sucked into that. But let's not go there. I want to stick to the topic of abortion. Their position, okay. And
we don't have to get too, but to say that the Agudis role were not necessarily Trump supporters. They were more like Bush, mainstream family conservative, than you know what you'd call your I don't know what Trump supporters even mean.
They're mainstream conservatives. But putting that aside, the fact is that I think that the Agudis are a growing organization.
Agudis Israel. I don't know what you mean, Agudis.
That's a nickname for the Agudas Israel, I've heard.
Is that a pejorative?
No, not at all. I think they call themselves. They are a growing organization, both in the United States and in Israel. They are joined by other Orthodox organizations and conservative Jewish organizations. And I think that Michael Jones does point out that the rescinding of Roe versus Wade is a moment by which he calls Jewish power is finally breached. And he points out that abortion is part of Jewish power. And in a narrow sense, he is correct. But to qualify that, it is a part of liberal Jewish power, what I call Sabbatian Jewish power. And I think that he's right, that this is a serious challenge to that power, and that we as Torah true Jews, to the degree that we are, or at least we advocate it, ought to take advantage of that and overthrow them in our faith and say that their days are over, that this liberal idea that abortion is fine up to birth and that this is a Jewish right is a heresy and that it's wrong. Abortion is not condoned by Judaism. Even if you look at their comments, they kind of very craftily parse words and they don't come out and say that, but that is what they're saying. And I will say this.
I mean, it's borderline ridiculous because Israel actually, in response to it, loosened abortion rules. And, you know, that's why, so you're going to end yourself up in the Natori Karta camp because you're going to say Israel is not representative of Jewish values. And, Israel is the most pro-abortion country in the world.
Well, David, it's you point to the Natori Karta camp. What I'm suggesting here is that...
I mean, why wouldn't what you're saying apply to the state of Israel in totality?
Thank you. I'm about to answer that.
Israel responded by...
Yes, you said that already. My point is that what you call the Natori Karta camp, or the Agudas Israel camp and the conservatives.
Agudas Israel is not
anti-Israel. Can I finish my statement, please, David?
Okay. Well, I'm just correcting it. I'm saying because Natori Karta is anti-Israel. Agudas Israel.
That's another subject. Let me get to my point here. The Orthodox camp in Israel and the Orthodox camp in the United States and conservative camp, both in Israel and the United States, which at least somewhat would be more prone to not supporting abortion on demand and tending toward a more Torah true approach to Judaism. This is our opportunity to take the high ground and overthrow the left, which has controlled Judaism to varying degrees, all the way going back to Shabtai Zvi. This is our opportunity to say, yeah, you have control of the high ground, but you don't necessarily represent the rank and file of Jews. And I think that if we start to get more vocal about that, you're going to see people that even I know, for example, in my synagogue, who quietly speak to me under their breath and say, gee, Charles, we're with you, but don't tell anybody. They're going to start to come out and reassume the moral high ground in our faith. This is an opportunity to overthrow that iron control by the left, including in Israel, that they have had over Jewish discourse and over Jewish understanding. And what I point out is that abortion in Jewish history, we are more liberal, frankly, than the Catholic Church. I will state that. But we don't condone abortion unless there is a situation, and the Agudi statement, the Agudath Israel statement, says this clearly, unless the life of the mother is at risk, in which case we do favor the life of the mother. We put the life of the living mother over her unborn child in that case, whereas I think that maybe the Catholic Church, whereas maybe ultra-Christian groups, they may not do that quite so quickly. You know, they might put the life of the unborn child first. So we do differ with them in that way. But we do not support elective abortion in Jewish law and in Jewish custom. It's only a recent phenomena as the left has taken over Judaism that somehow this is becoming a thing. And even as it does, they don't even come out and say it in clear terms, but that is what they're about. And what they're about is contrary to Jewish law and Jewish understanding.
Yeah, I don't see the logic of the we. In a sense, you could say, okay, this is what I believe personally, and I act as an individual, but you're trying to say that we collectively should act as Jews in your response to U.S.
No, the other side is saying we should collectively act. I'm looking at the same thing that the Agudath Israel looks at in this statement, and that is Jewish tradition and Jewish law, which does not condone abortion except when the life of the mother is at risk. That is what I'm looking at. And
they're a legitimate constituency that represents hundreds of thousands of Jews, as where you are an individual Jew with your opinion, but you don't represent Jews.
I don't claim to represent Jews, but I am finding common cause with people like the Agudath Israel, like
and
the
Torah. You say that your Bible. Opinion on this issue is informed by your Judaism, even. Just well, your opinion on the issue.
Look, both sides claim
may or may not be informed both sides, by your Judaism.
Both sides are claiming that their opinion is informed by Judaism. The side that says that the abortion is a Jewish ritual and the side that says that Judaism prefers life. Both sides claim that. The question is, which side is the more legitimate side? And I'm suggesting that the side that claims life is the more legitimate side, based upon history, based upon religious texts, based upon rabbinic rulings going back to the Talmud, and based upon Jewish tradition. Now, Jewish tradition did not support abortion. Support for abortion in Judaism is a relatively modern phenomena, and it is one that diverges from Torah true Judaism. That's what I'm saying. And I'm saying that it's time to have this argument within the Jewish faith, and it's now an argument that I think we're in a position to win now that Roe versus Wade has been overturned. And in that sense, Michael Jones is correct. He's wrong. Of course, he's correct in a very narrow sense. He wants to condemn all of Judaism because he thinks we're all like riddled with guilt because of the execution of Jesus. That's a whole crazy different ball of wax. But he is correct in terms of that the high ground of modern American influenced Judaism is pro-choice on abortion. They have been had leaders who have pushed it, and that their days are now questioned. Their supremacy within the Jewish faith is now challenged. And I think that conservative Jews, even hopefully many liberal Jews who are honest, are going to be willing to stand up and make that challenge at this point.
I don't follow your logic of it doesn't matter that whether you're saying is right. So you're saying that the even if some theoretical position as this is what Torah true Judaism stands for, you so what? The Torah true Judaism is the minority of American Jewry. Torah true Judaism does not represent the voting bloc, where the Jewish voting bloc is important besides in New York and in terms of the money and power, that the pro-choice voice is still the
powerful, I agree with you, Dovid, but the, voice. I'm look, not I agree with you on the facts.
How is this a win when the majority of Jews are still doing what they're doing?
I agree with you when it comes to the facts on the ground. The left wing still controls the majority of people in Judaism.
And the money and the political power.
And the money and the power. They have for probably the better part of a century. My point is that now with this defeat of their agenda, we have the opportunity to fight back, not in a literal sense, but in the sense of ideas. We now have the opportunity to come out, because I think there's a lot more.
How does this help you fight back?
Because their agenda, which is abortion on demand on a national level, has now been set back. I mean, Michael Jones is right about that. They were pushing that for 50 years, and now there's an opportunity to move that aside and educate our fellow Jews about the fact that this is not a good idea. And I think what we're going to find is that, yes, the majority, the big money, the big power, as you say, is still the left wing. A lot of people who were afraid of their reputation, they were fearful of what would happen. They've seen what happens to people like me, frankly. They're going to be emboldened, and they're going to want to come out and say, hey, Judaism does not condone abortion. You know, we do support the life of the mother, but beyond that, no. Michael Jones also made the point, because I listened to
that point, to think that Jews condone abortion. So whether Judaism or not condones abortion is kind of a mute issue, just like the state of Israel.
You know, all right, David, you know,
Tori Karta.
I understand.
Like, what does it matter if Judaism opposes it, if Jews support it?
David, we're on a merry-go-round.
Just like, say, if Judaism opposes the state of Israel, what does it matter? There's a state of Israel and it represents the majority of Jews.
All right. As I say, we're on a bit of a merry-go-round here.
Issue win. So you say, okay, you won on this issue. I don't see how you claim that's going to be good for anything.
I'll tell you how.
Besides, you won on this issue.
I'll tell you how. Because this is one of the most fundamental issues in existence, the right to life or death. And it goes to very profound questions of faith and of science, quite frankly. And that, yes, again, you are correct. They still control the high ground. But this is an opportunity to challenge that. And I think when we do, and if we can be vocal enough, and if we can educate enough,
you're
going
to
see people come out of the woodwork and support.
How did it help you challenge it, besides saying that you're
because,
in opposition
I'll
to
tell
the
you
majority
how.
Of
because,
American Jews?
Because the issue itself has now been set back by the Supreme Court taking away this right to have an abortion nationally. That is a major setback for the left in general, but for the left-wing Jewish establishment in particular, because Jones is right, the left-wing Jewish establishment has been one of the groups on the forefront of supporting that agenda. Now, I want to move on to another topic here. The other thing that he said is that he's critical of Jews going all the way back to the time of Moses, because we always fail to keep the covenant. And he uses the example of the idol worship at the foot of Sinai while Moses is up there at the highest moment in Jewish experience, receiving the Torah. You had the Jewish people below committing the most worst kinds of sins with the setting up of the golden calf. And he points out that that's part of what he calls and notes is the idol worshiping practice of Moloch, which is the killing of children. Basically, the parents would give their babies to Moloch, the false god, who would be controlled by very evil people. And that they would take the baby and they throw the baby into the belly of the idol, burning idol. And that in exchange, that family would get some kind of a, who knows what, absolution or something. And that he then says that that's what Jews are. But the fact is that that's false on his part, because the entire existence, yes, we have always fallen by the way. We've fallen by the way now with our support for abortion. But the entire struggle of the Jewish covenant all the way from the time of Moses till today, is the internal struggle between those who are trying to achieve holiness and godliness and to know God and to therefore represent God on earth as a priestly sect, and those who are falling away from holiness and who are sliding down in the direction of idol worship as it's expressed in every generation. So the fact that we fell down is not because that's who we are. That was because we had forsaken who we were, and there is an element within us who does so in every generation. And it's the struggle within Judaism between that element and the element who is trying to be holy that the entire human race has an investment in, and it continues to have an investment in it. And we should support, as Jews, certainly internally, but the rest of the world should support the Jewish people's strive toward holiness and to condemn those who are sliding away from holiness and are becoming unholy.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like you're preaching Judaism, and it doesn't make sense to me. Like, if you wanted to preach Judaism, you should have became a rabbi, and now you're speaking like there should be a collective Judaism, like just some sort of fantasy that bad things happening for the majority Jewish representation is going to somehow be advantageous for Jews. I mean, you know, so, okay, like, you know, there's factionalism in Judaism, and you know, it'd be like being anti-Israel, and if bad things happen to Israel, it's like a win for us. Like, I don't see any logic to.
I'm saying that, look, the struggle within the Jewish people spiritually is an internal struggle. It's not, I mean, how should I put this? It's like we have the striving toward holiness and the falling away from holiness, and that we should strive to be more holy by cleaning out the Augean stables every so often and challenging internally those who have tried to corrupt the covenant, both spiritually and, for that matter, historically and politically. And that this is an opportunity for an awakening amongst us to our true nature, to our true mission, to what God commanded of us at Sinai, and to then therefore expose and cleanse those who have been corrupted, and to not so do so in a way that damages the Jewish people. I've heard you say this, and I get it. You know, we have to be careful as a group about criticizing because that could be used by anti-Semites. And, you know, sure, I think we have to factor that in. But internally, we need to be vigilant in terms of achieving this. I'd point out to the work of Rabbi Jacob Emden. Okay, do you know who he was?
Well, yeah, of course. I mean, chief rabbi of Amsterdam or whatever.
That's right. He challenged in his day the heretical agenda and teaching of Jacob Frank. And he pointed out, and there was an internal struggle that went on probably for a century within Judaism between the people that were represented by Rabbi Jacob Emden and many others, rabbis and holy people, who were trying to preserve the covenant, and the people that were represented by Jacob Frank, who were trying to pervert the covenant, and who were doing so by using secretive methods and subversive means. And it was a huge war that should be written about more. Maybe I might write a book about it. But the point is that it represents the same war that we're dealing with now. He wasn't damaging Judaism by standing up for the covenant and exposing corrupt Jews, which he did in no uncertain terms. He was basically cleaning out the rot and the corruption and the agendas that were trying to damage and destroy the covenant in every sense. And that's what I'm saying. We have to be like Rabbi Emden now. We have to expose, this is our opportunity, given the fact that they've had a setback, to expose this rotten, Frankist establishment and to try to ask them to right their ships, you know, and to say, hey, you know, enough with this. Abortion is not a Jewish sacrament, right? I mean, you know, stop with that crap. That's a lie. There's nothing in Jewish history, nothing in Jewish covenant, nothing in rabbinic literature, nothing in any of our writings that would back that up. We have to challenge them on that.
I mean, we want to get Adam Green. So how come you aren't protesting Israel then? I mean, you're a Jew. Why are you so worried about that in America when in Israel it's way worse than here?
I am worried about it in Israel. I think Israelis should clean their own house in that regard. I don't know why Israel has become so much under the thrall of this. I think that in Israel, it's not that I would side with the Naturi Carta, and I would totally disagree with them on their not recognizing Israel, but I would side with people like my late cousin, who was an Orthodox Jew who lived in Israel and who was part of a more modern Orthodox organization. And he was into politics, and he was fairly well known in Israel, and other conservative Jews in Israel. You know, this is an opportunity to hopefully help, you know, encourage the Israelis to right the ship spiritually. I mean, let's not forget, in Israel, the vast majority of people are big supporters of Donald Trump, right? They're naming the train station after him.
I don't think that anymore. I
mean, they're not naming the train station after him anymore?
Well, I mean, I don't think they're going to rescind that, but it's saying that most Israelis still have moved on.
No, they haven't. I actually
know about their future.
You're quite wrong.
It's unlikely that supportive.
No, they are still supporting Trump. I mean,
you're just fantasizing.
No, I'm not fantasizing this. I know this is anecdotal, but I actually spoke with somebody that I know pretty well, who just got back from Israel, maybe about 3 or 4 months ago, who told me that the Israelis he traveled widely are very much still supporters of Trump. And they're very, disturbed by, let's just say, what happened in 2020, because that could have ramifications all over the world in terms of freedom. And that he is still very well supported. Now, again, I will tell you that is anecdotal. I think that if you took a poll in Israel, you would still find that Trump is very widely supported, even by liberals. And they don't like Biden for sure. Anyway, Dovid, what else is new?
Well, I mean, speaking of Israel, a lot of news. I mean, Israel is going to elections again. The government finally dissolved next week. Yair Lapid, who was the closest to a critic of Donald Trump of any of the Israeli politicians, will be sworn in as prime minister.
Mm-hmm.
And elections are scheduled for, I think November 1st will be a new round of Israeli elections on November 1st.
Okay. Do you think Netanyahu is a threat to come back?
Well, he's the major player. I'm going to call him a threat.
Maybe he's a threat.
Like his party is polling to have one of the highest numbers. It's a coalition system. So in terms of his path to a coalition is unclear that he has a path to a coalition, and he'll run, he'll try his best. It'll be an interesting scenario because Lapid, in the same way that Netanyahu remained prime minister for years by new elections as default, where he really wasn't popular enough to be prime minister because of default, he remained prime minister for really 2 or 3 years longer than he should have, that Lapid will be in that position. As long as there's new elections, he will be prime minister. So it's unclear what's going to happen, whether there'll be another broad coalition, including Arabs or some sort of broad. There's no path forward on the right or the left, largely because of the Arabs. That the left is not really inclusive of the Arabs, or the Arabs aren't, if you want to put the Arabs as leftist, is not necessarily accurate. So there's no path forward for either side in the foreseeable future. So it's pretty unclear what's going to happen. Biden is going to Israel and Saudi Arabia, and despite your statement, Biden straight up said he's going to Saudi Arabia for the purpose of supporting Israel. He was asked at the press conference in NATO today about gas prices, and Biden was straight up said, I'm going to Saudi Arabia to help out Israel, not to lower gas prices.
Well, I mean, that's what he says. I think he's trying to lower gas prices, but either way, I think if that's true, then fine.
And even he said that it's at at the specific, I guess, I don't call it request or I mean, this Biden said today that the Israelis told them to go to Israel. Ironically, that was whatever sense that makes, that was his statement that he's going to Israel because the Israelis told him to.
I don't really know what's going on with that. I just know that everything he touches turns to crap. So, I mean, I only wish that, I only hope things go well. I think that there's an encouraging development in Iran in that you have what looks to me to be almost somewhat of a revolution. People are on the street and they're pro-American. They've even seen flags that are pro-Israel in Iran.
I didn't hear anything about that.
Oh yeah, check it out. It's you can see it online. I mean, there's in major cities there are people who are, you know, rallying and gathering and protesting the mullahs, and you know we don't get a lot of information out of there. I mean, I would think that this, in a way, is an example of where, you know, who is in power in a country does matter. Because I think that had Trump been in power right now, had he been serving his second term, he probably would have been helping this rebellion, either by, not directly, but through broadcasting and through public support and, you know, and whatever kind of in-kind support he could lend. That's not happening out of this administration. They're doing nothing to help people who are trying to shuffle off this totalitarian coil that they've been living under since Khomeini.
Yeah, I mean, my impression is the opposite, and that it's actually Iran that's the most stable democracy in the Middle East outside of Israel. And you know, so we're going to make deals with Saudi Arabia, that is a much less democratic than Iran, and you're largely for the benefit of Israel, or even on clear gases, or most likely because they're in economically good shape and could afford to economically benefit America in terms of buying weapons or some greater purpose. But we're about to make deals. I mean, the reality is what the Biden administration is going to do, despite whatever your claims about what you think about Biden, is they're going to make concessions to Saudi Arabia on behalf of America, for Saudi Arabia to normalize ties with Israel, basically.
Good. And get oil.
In return for Saudi Arabia normalizing relations with
Hallelujah. And also
with oil. Israel, America is going to normalize relations with Saudi Arabia.
Hallelujah. First of all, David, Saudi Arabia has been a de facto American protectorate since FDR. When Franklin Roosevelt finished his traitorous sessions in Yalta, where he sold Eastern Europe out to the Soviets, he stopped in Alexandria Harbor and met with the Saudi Arabian king, whoever it was at that time. It was a Faisal, I don't know. But basically what happened is that the United States took over as the protector and the overseer of the Saudi regime from the British, who had played that role since World War I and the collapse of the Turkish Ottoman Empire. So every administration since then, Democrat and Republican, has had a special relationship with Saudi Arabia. That's nothing new.
Why does it mean in terms of the claim that there's some sort of goal to spread democracy? And the reality is in terms of Iran, that Iran is substantially closer to a democracy than Saudi Arabia, and
fine.
Whatever the goal, they're saying it's inconsistent. If the goal was to spread democracy, then that would be more.
No, I don't think that is the goal. The goal is to have friendly
in terms of Iran, and saying Biden friends. Said straight up that it's about Israel, and it's kind of like you said, like you're insistent that Biden is kind of like this anti-Semite who doesn't really.
I never said that.
As where Biden is insistent that he's basically completely directing his policy for the benefit of Israel.
I never said he was an anti-Semite at all. And I say
the claim in the policy that he has made clear that the reason he's doing this
right.
really
in policy Hallelujah.
is explicitly and I think for it's the all, benefit.
And it's also for oil, because the United States has put such onerous regulation on the development of American pipelines that we have to do something, because gas prices are going through the roof and oil prices are going through the roof, which means that our economy is seriously compromised. For reasons that are interesting, it's a whole different subject. But the point is that if they're going to get normalizing with Israel, I say, great. Look, Iran, and I'm not saying is Saudi Arabia is some great democracy. It's not. It's a theocracy. But, Iran has taken the posture not only as an enemy of the United States and Israel, but Iran has taken an aggressive military posture of exporting their revolution, their radical Islamic revolution, to develop proxy armies on the border of Israel, such as Hezbollah, and in an indirect sense, Hamas. So, Saudi Arabia isn't doing that. And I think that, and also the Iranians are backing the Houthi tribesmen in Yemen. So, they are conquerors. They are trying to expand their Islamic empire. And, for that reason, I think that the Western democracies, or whatever you want to say, and the United States and Israel needs to stand up against it. And I hope that they end up dealing with a revolution. Saudi, I'm not saying that they're so free and great, but they are our allies, and they should be the ally of Israel. And to quote Lyndon Johnson, who once was asked why the United States was backing Somoza in Nicaragua, who was a real tough guy, he said, "Look, he may be a son of a bitch, but he's our son of a bitch." So that's how I view it. So what else is happening in the world?
Those are the major issues. Okay. There's more happening, but...
Maybe we could take a call. I don't know if anyone's... it's kind of... I know we're live and people might be listening at other times of the day, but if you happen to be listening, you're welcome to join the program. 617-396-4958. It looks like we just got a call and they didn't get through. Try again. 617-396-4958. I am manning the phone lines. You're welcome to join us. This is a live program. What is on your mind? You can discuss the issues that Dovid and I are talking about, or if you'd like, you can change the subject, as long as we maintain a certain level of community standards. I'm open to any and all. 617-396-4958. If you're on Getter, please call. We're live on Getter. 617-396-4958. And if you want to comment by texting or by whatever they call it, ranting, or you can go to Rumble and watch the program live. Judaism and abortion is our main subject, but you can get into anything you'd like to get into. And also, I should mention, why not? The program, I don't have sponsors. I don't ask for money. Nothing like that. But I support the program through my books, available at Amazon Books, available at barnesandnoble.com. You can purchase a book, an ebook, for as little as I think go for $2 or $3. I even think that my most recent book is still free as an ebook. They usually give out some free ones when the book is first published. That is The Biden Coup. And check them out. It's at Amazon Books, Charles Moskowitz. Put my name in the server and you'll see about 20 books coming up. I'm working on a new one right now that is dealing with the American moral theory. Anyway, so Dovid, I don't know if we're going to get a call, but we are getting a call. Hello, you're on the air. Thanks for joining us.
Hi, this is Charles and Dovid.
Hi, Charles. How are you? What's on your mind?
Yeah, no, I'm asking, is this Charles and Dovid?
Yes, it is. Yep.
I had a quick question. This is very off topic from what you guys are talking about, but it is a question about scripture. The Septuagint, which is the original version of the Tanakh that Jews had, it ends with the book of Daniel, which points to Messiah. And then the Tanakh, or that you guys have right now, ends with the book of Chronicles, that ends with the leader Cyrus pointing or releasing the Jews to go back to Israel. And I believe that was in the 16th century when the books were rearranged. Do you think that is a reason why there's been more of a focus on restoring the state of Israel instead of the return of, like, the Jewish Messiah?
Well, I mean, David, you certainly can comment. I'll just briefly comment that I don't think one necessarily oversteps the other. I think the idea is that, and correct me if I'm wrong, David, you're much more a theologian than me. I'm not. But the idea is that the return to Israel, the land that God promised us, is the beginning of the development of a messianic age. And that in 1967, when Israel was successful in reasserting control over Jerusalem, that set the stage eventually, not now necessarily, but maybe whenever God sees it best, for the rebuilding of the temple. And there's a series of things that need to happen in order for that to happen and then for the Messiah to come. So I don't think that one thing necessarily negates the other thing. I also think that the book of Daniel is a part of the Jewish Tanakh. I've heard some Christians claim that we're forbidden to read it. That's not true. I've heard the book of Daniel studied in my synagogue. David?
Yeah, I'm just saying generally, as Jews, we follow the rabbis, not the scripture, and we follow Moses. So, in the Talmud, the expression that rulings of law are all based off Moses. We could only learn Hamedical, moral, ethical teachings from the prophets. So it makes absolutely no difference, the canonization. And if you're going to interpret that in terms of what does it mean for Messiah coming, that Judaism's more based on law. It's not, we have our beliefs about what's going to happen at the end of days, but that's not integral to our beliefs. And generally, the Mosaic law is applicable no matter what. So in terms of the approach where Israel has become a big focus, but that's not necessarily because of like Messiah or end of days or returning, as like Charles was mentioning last week about like marriage or living in Israel, is that there's many laws that only could be done in Israel. So you could interpret the Jews and the making of going back to Israel as something messianic in prophecy, but that's not necessary. And that's not the mainstream view. The mainstream is that you could just do more mitzvahs living in Israel. And as said, among Orthodox Jews, it's about, at least of Haredim, it's about 50-50 on the nature of the support of the Israeli government. Even the Agudat Israel use the expression as parv, neutral on Israel. They work together, as opposed to Natori Karta, who is anti-Israel. The majority of Haredi Jews work together with Israel, but in theological position, they're generally opposed to Israel and saying that the state is not any more representative of Judaism than a non-Jewish state and has nothing to do with the messianic prophecy. Like Jews returned to Israel might, but the Jewish state of Israel has nothing to do with our religion.
Well, can I just, let me just quickly interject there. They're opposed to the secular Jewish state. I mean, they view it as not holy enough. And, they may even be opposed, I guess, to a Jewish state at all, but in Judaism.
Or neutral.
Okay, because there is this concept of Eretz Yisrael, the land of Israel, which we are commanded to take possession of, going all the way back to Abraham. But go ahead, caller.
Oh, well, I was going to ask, So do you, either one of you know why? So if the original text was the Septuagint with the books in a certain order, why it was changed in the form that we have it today? And I just add one other point. Like
you claim there was change. I don't think that's accurate.
And also the Septuagint was not the original text. The original text was Hebrew. The Septuagint is Greek.
I understand that, yeah. But I meant first century Judaism. That was what the dominant text being used was.
I'm not sure that's true either. I think the dominant text in first century Judaism was Aramaic and Hebrew. I mean,
I think it was the Septuagint and Greek.
No, I'm not sure about that. I don't think the rabbis, the Talmudic rabbis and Yehuda Hanazi, they were not big fans of the Greek text. In fact, when the Septuagint was finished, that was a year of mourning among Jews, because there were so many things in it that were misinterpreted from the Hebrew. David?
I thought the Septuagint was translated by a number of Jewish scholars.
I think they participated in it, but it was not really a Jewish enterprise, I don't think. David, do you know a lot about this?
Yeah, I mean, that's our legend, was that 70 Jews were forced by the
Ptolemies, right?
Ptolemies to translate it, possibly against our will, and
they were also working with Greek scholars, and there are several. I'm not going to get into it because I'm not a scholar on it. I could mention a few examples, and I'm not going to go there. But there are several words and several phrases that were not translated properly from the Hebrew to the Greek, and so. You know, we rely on the Hebrew text, which is the authentic original text of the.
When we claim the canonization, why books are there in which order, and right. That's discussed in the Talmud. So, at least according to our record, that was canonized in ancient times with the the exact order. I'm not sure that.
When was the Tanakh canonized?
Well, I mean, it's disputed. In the Talmud, it discusses it, but I mean, the Talmud is recorded over many years. So
many centuries.
When exactly that happened is, so to say, dispute among scholars. But it was definitely not 1600.
Right. Well, that's a bit late. Yeah, I think it goes.
As I said, prophecy is not one of the main features of Judaism. They're saying that we follow Moses exclusively, and we learn lessons from the prophets. So and even from that perspective, we don't follow Moses, we follow the rabbis. So I mentioned like Maimonides and our understanding about how messianic events are going to unfold. That would be based off of the rabbis, not off scripture.
And we assume that the rabbis follow the scripture. I suppose it works the same way that the Catholic Church, they depend on the Pope and the Cardinals to read the scripture. Anyway, caller, listen, thanks so much for joining me.
Sorry, I didn't want to monopolize.
No, that time, that's great.
I get that question.
Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you.
All right.
Yeah, we appreciate the call.
You bet. Okay, maybe we have a little time here for another call. 617-396-4958. Is the number if you'd like to join us in this final part of the program, 617-396-4958. Yours truly, Charles Moskowitz and David are here live. And of course, you can chat at Rumble. And please subscribe to my Rumble station. I would really appreciate it. It costs you nothing to do it. And you would, in case I'm censored elsewhere, you can always get my commentary on Rumble. I just found out that my TikTok station, my second TikTok station, has been taken down. My first TikTok station, I was up to almost 100,000 followers when it was taken down. My second TikTok station, I think I was up to closing in on 20,000. I just found out that that's been taken down. And the reason it's taken down is because I comment on one forbidden subject, and that is the 2020 election. And I can assure you, I observe community standards. I am a former radio talk show host in Greater Boston, where I worked at a number of stations, and I was never accused of not observing community standards or violating FCC regulations. I know what those are, and I observe them scrupulously. And talk about the 2000 election falls within the purview of free speech. If I was doing this on a radio station, I would have no problem. And in fact, Jeff Kooner here in Boston at WRKO, he spends a lot of time talking about it and quite openly, and that's a 50,000 watt station. But apparently for YouTube and TikTok, it's verboten. Anyway, Dovid.
Because you're confusing free speech and community standards. I mean, community standards is the arbitrary rules that they set forth.
Well, they use the word community standards and say I violated them by engaging in that kind of talk. And that I'm just saying that those
the community standards means the arbitrary rules that that community.
You're right. But the thing is that their interpretation of what community standards are, I would suggest, are basically involving political censorship.
Yeah, but by definition, not community standards means the community
of them, right?
The standards
of TikTok.
It's not based on saying like, okay, you're in my house, you follow my rules, or you don't come in my house.
I get it, David, but I don't disabuse them of that right, but I'm just noting that their community standards are very politically left, and if you don't observe them, you're not allowed. And the thing that troubles me is that they have such a large footprint in the area of communication that they're in a position where they can create public opinion and do it under the false guise that they're into free speech. Anyway, David, what do you have coming up on your show?
I went to the Albert Kahn Museum. Like, I streamed some engineering conferences. I spoke to this person from what's called active inference, conscious science studies. So mostly science, steering clear of politics. It's tough to know my place, or even Judaism. Generally, I'm steering clear, like to say, to be an independent scholar of Judaism and just say, well, that's what these books say. That's what they taught me when I was in Orthodox schools. But, to speak on behalf of Judaism. And when I do, it's usually to clarify sectarianism, where it's just saying, well, these guys say this and represent this much of the population, or these guys say that, or even just clarifying that this is the law in Israel, that, mm-hmm. Jews might feel this way. This is factually what the law is in Israel. So even if that, I've been keeping that to a minimum because it's testy, because mostly I get pushback from Jews, people like you, mm-hmm. in essence, that want to, so to say, represent Judaism, are going to say that, that's not what I, believe. And so even to say, well, that's what they taught me when I was in these schools.
As to go back to where we started, I'm not saying this. I'm looking at Agudath Israel, which is a group that you happen to respect, and other Jewish organizations and Jewish
I went to their member
traditions
school,
and scholarship. I'm not just speaking out of my
What I'm saying, you don't have any affiliation with them. Went to their schools.
Then you should be
under their rabbis. Right. And then to say, well, there's a federation, there's official organizations that speak on behalf of Judaism, and just be like, well, this is what they say. And like, I'm a Jew, I disagree.
Well, fine.
I try to give, independent commentary and analysis where
I don't claim to be
my own thoughts. So you're more commenting and forwarding your own opinion.
Quite the opposite. I'm not claiming to be an independent. I'm siding with a particular point of view that exists.
That's the difference between me and you.
Yes, it is. I do take position.
That's probably why I'm more popular guest on Judaism, because people, saying, "Well, I don't care what you think. I just want to know what the books say,
I'm not sure. I'm not sure that is why you're more popular, but I'm not going to go there. The point I'm making here is that there are two points of view on the issue we talked about, which was abortion. And I am siding with one of those points of view because I believe it draws from more authentic traditions and more authentic truths. Now, that's something that I'm saying here is that We should have the debate. We should enjoin the debate. The other side does not want the debate because they probably know they'll lose. So they're going to
generally
and censor.
That's not representative of Judy, like pick and choose Judaism.
I didn't say it represents Judaism. I say that in this particular
schools,
I'm
you
saying
don't belong to their synagogue. So I mean, you just say you agree with them on one.
I am saying no, in more than one.
From their perspective, you like
in more than
it,
one.
It doesn't matter. You can't pick and choose.
I'm not picking and choosing.
You can't pick and choose Judaism. Like if you had chose to send your kids to their schools, you didn't. If you chose to be a member of their synagogues, you didn't.
I am not picking and choosing. I'm saying that in general, I do side with a predominant point of view. That also, by the way, does exist at the synagogue that I am a member of and at the Jewish school that my child went to. That may not be the dominant view in those institutions, but is there and it is recognized. And that my views are a part of one that is becoming increasingly articulated.
That's a factual, whether your synagogue's in a Gudist member or not.
It's not a Gudist member.
I sincerely doubt it is.
It's not.
But that's a factual... That's a denominational fact.
Regardless of my memberships, the point is that there is within Judaism a debate between very broadly defined sides on general issues, and that I do ascribe to one of those two sides because I believe it's more consistent with not only Jewish tradition, but with the Torah as given by God. Now, this is something where somebody could say, oh, that's not true. My side is, we believe that, you know, whatever it is, abortion on demand, fine. All I'm saying is, let's have the discourse and the debate and see which side becomes more predominant.
You're not an Orthodox
and I,
Jew. So just because you side with a Gudist, you're not representative.
But I am agreeing with the people who are.
That agrees with them. On one particular issue.
No, it's more than
they don't represent you.
We're going in a
part of their constituency that they lobby.
Yes, I am a part of it, even if I'm not a member. And that it's more than one.
I mean, you're a self-proclaimed part.
I more than self-proclaimed. I have a 20-year record of being involved in Jewish affairs.
But you don't have a record of going to their schools, being a member of their organization, or being an Orthodox Jew.
I'm a traditional Jew, and I have been publicly supportive of. I've had these people on my program over the 20 years that I've done radio off and on. And, you know, I have some cred in the area. That's all I can say. And I do publicly and unabashedly support certain points of view. I am simply saying, let's have the debate. The other side doesn't want the debate because they're going to try to, first of all, I think because they know they'd lose, but secondly, because they are in power, as you said, they've got
the
money.
They speak to me because I
fish for their schools. And they're going to keep people like.
I'm saying you don't actually represent the people you're speaking on behalf.
I don't claim to represent anyone but myself. What I'm stating is that my opinions on these issues are consistent with the opinions of other people who are more scholarly than me. And I support those opinions and their efforts openly. I'm not claiming to be, I don't claim to either be a rabbi or a Jewish scholar. I don't make that claim, unlike you. I am simply stating that based on my more than simple reading of their agendas and of texts, again, I'm not a scholar, but I'm more than your average person with knowledge. I have come to various opinions and I do support those opinions publicly. And do so, by the way, at times that are at particular risk to me because I believe that they're true. And as I started this program, I would note that I think we are at a pivotal time in Jewish history in terms of the opinions that I generally do support, taking the high ground in Jewish life and in Jewish faith. Anyway, Dovid, we should wrap it up.
So, yeah, Shabbat Shalom. Have a great weekend.
Same with you. By the way, next week I'm going to be away, so... I'll have to talk to you in 2 weeks.
Okay,
thanks a lot, David. All right, take care.